You're listening to the Chapman Cast, a podcast about religion and life.
Welcome to the Chapman Cast. My name is Pierce, and today I'm joined by Reverend Brian Smith. And I wanted to have him on the show to talk about doubt, which he wrote a long dissertation about. But before we get started, Brian, how are you doing today?
Thanks, Pierce, for having me on the show. At the moment, I'm doing pretty well. I've actually been dealing with a bit of depression over the last couple of days. That just puts me in a more somber, in some ways reflective mood about life. Maybe appropriate for this topic. But today, I'm feeling pretty good and enjoying connecting with people. I'm here in Bernathen.
I'm also doing really well. It's really nice to have sunny, shiny weather. This last week has been pretty rainy and miserable. So I've found that my mood is definitely improved with the sunshine. I wanted to talk to you about doubt. And the main question I have is, what good is doubt? It seems to me that doubt usually just causes pain and suffering. If I were going to spend a whole year studying something for a dissertation, I'd pick happiness. I did. What inspired you to pick doubt?
I love that contrast of subjects to spend a lot of time studying. Why doubt? I mean, it is funny, about to graduate from theological school where I'm going into a career of teaching religion, to focus on doubt. I like to start with the principle that everything that exists has use brought out of it, is put to some use. That's a principle in the new church, and I think it's really a good place to start. So any situation, any feeling, any confusion or doubt and despair has something good that can be brought out of it. And you also mentioned it seems like it's a lot of pain and unhappiness. And I think maybe as a definition of doubt, it certainly is. There is an intellectual part to doubt where it's just playing mind games and arguments. But very often, the only reason we care about it is because it's connected with emotional content as well, which could maybe be called more despair.
Well, it sounds like we're talking about two halves of a similar thing, intellectual doubt and emotional doubt. Just for happiness sake, let's talk about intellectual doubt first. Because it seems to me that intellectual doubt isn't just useful, but really important. I run into people who have never questioned anything in their lives, or who hear some scientific fact and think, oh, that's just the way it is, even if it was told to them by their friend or their neighbor. So it seems to me that intellectual doubt isn't just kind of a good idea. It's something that we should encourage in ourselves, perhaps. When does that intellectual skepticism become a more destructive emotional doubt about things that are really important and central to who we are?
Well, I think one of the real strengths of the Western world is to focus on questioning things, question everything and look at it. Doubt intellectually can act as a protection mechanism. And even if we're going to accept something into our mind, it can act as a way of digesting or taking apart that idea, so that when we bring it into our mind, into our own thinking, it's meaningful. There's a lot of use there. When you say when it becomes something, the more emotional, painful side of it, I think it's more about what's being doubted. It's not that painful to me to doubt whether you're right in your assertion about how much some football player is getting paid. I don't care much about football, don't care about that player. I may doubt it. Sounds outrageous what you've said. But that fact isn't already part of what I care about. And, you know, the more I care about football, the more that might be painful or significant to me. So it's partly a matter of what I already identify with and also the degree of importance I place on them. Religious doubt, or doubt about my job and my ability to do my job, or doubt about my married partner, doubt about my children or their success, these are things that are personal to me. I've made part of my identity and are also of great importance to me. Even a passing intellectual question of, oh, you know, maybe I don't like the way my wife does thus and such. You know, those type of thoughts come up, but because of the content, that could spiral into something that's very emotionally painful to me if I start questioning my wife. And that's where doubt really gets its edge.
Well, it seems to me that those more important things in our lives, spouses or our friends or our belief in God, are the things that we should think most critically about. And this is what I'm wondering about. If there was a NASA engineer and he was doubting whether or not he had done the math right on sending a rocket to the moon, he needs to check the data. He he needs to have a little bit of skepticism. But when does that skepticism become something that prevents him from actually launching the rocket? When does my thoughts that can be perhaps healthy about whether or not I'm doing a good job, or whether or not I've got a good relationship with my wife, become something destructive?
I'd like to start by just sort of laying out three categories of the use of doubt. You've already talked about it being something that allows us to challenge ideas that are coming into our head, and that's really important. I think of doubt serving three main purposes. It serves as a protection against what's called profanation. That's maybe the least understood, but a very important idea. It's like a lock on a medicine cabinet or something. A child can't access that medicine, which can be quite useful because there's stuff in there that's dangerous. And so doubt, in this case, around religious ideas, prevents people from going further. They're just essentially bored or uninterested in religious propositions. The reason for that is if the person is not in a state where they're ready to really commit to it and really live by it, by bringing their mind and their heart partially into an exploration of certain religious ideas, they can corrupt them, twist them, and what's called profane them.
Can you give an example of that with a real religious principle?
A principle is that, say, you need to worship with reverence, and that is a respect for God. It's a humility. It's an attitude that somebody can bring to worship and to reading the word. If I'm not at a point where I am at all interested in religion, you know, there are atheists who make a career in Bible studies, and they can do that with less harm. I don't think it's a good career choice, frankly, but it's an indifference, looking at it factually. Whereas if I dabble in the idea that maybe this is holy, this book or this experience of worship, and then treat it disrespectfully, then I'm starting to mix my sense of what could be divine, which is my possible connection with the divine, with irreverence or cynicism or derogatory humor, that sort of thing.
So it sounds like this category of doubt, this doubt that's a protection against profanation, isn't an all or nothing thing. It sounds like it's by degrees, because someone can believe in God to one extent and have a sense of the sacred, but still have enough doubt in their mind that when they run into something sacrilegious, it maybe doesn't destroy their belief in God or their ability to believe in God, because they still have that sort of wiggle room in their belief.
Yeah, I like that by degrees idea, because, you know, I'm in conversation at the moment with a person who has really spent a good 20 years getting distant from religion. It was hammered on him, and it wasn't a good experience. And he's not willing to just live as an atheist. That doesn't work for him either, and he's interested in faith. So for somebody like that, they don't subscribe to any one religion. They might have a belief in a divine or a higher power. If they were to immediately accept the idea of Jesus Christ as God without a full commitment, then that idea could be in danger. If I just believe in the divine, but I'm not so sure about Christianity, then somebody could make a joke, and it's not going to really matter because that's not part of my religion. That's not part of the way I connect with the Lord. Even though I think that that opens all sorts of great worlds to the person when they're ready. But if they're held back from that a little bit by doubt, they can look more critically at that idea. And then as they're becoming more open, then they need to bring more respect and more commitment to the ideas that they really start to see as true.
It sounds like this aspect of doubt, a protection from profanation, also lets people, when they do accept, say, that Jesus Christ is God, because they've doubted it before they accepted it, their acceptance of it is really true. It's not just willy-nilly or because they grew up that way. It's because they've thought about it and they've consciously chosen it. How does that relate to the second or third part of doubt?
Kind of use for doubt or purpose of doubt. You basically expressed it. Protection against profanation is against corrupting or messing up with religion. But what you're talking about is also the really digesting and taking in an idea fully. And I think that's exactly it. If doubt is in our mind as we're being faced with a new idea, or even an idea that's been in our head from childhood, but we haven't really come to love, it forces us to work over that idea and really try it on, let go of it, try it in different ways. digestion is a perfect analogy for it, because it gets, the idea gets chewed up and then moves through our system, taking the goods, the useful parts of it out, incorporating it into our body, and passing the rest through. If I am totally unreceptive to a certain idea, it's going to pass right through my system, and I will not benefit from it. But the more I'm open to it, I may take some benefit from it. Doubt is paramount for really making things our own. To me, it's such a beautiful and hard idea at the same time, because no one is in heaven by accident or by coercion. The Lord ensures that. The Lord ensures that we have the ability to resist Him, have the ability to make other choices. And so when we decide to go to heaven, it is really a choice. And I love that idea, but the mechanism that allows for that is these, at times, excruciating experiences of doubt.
Yeah, coming up on the Easter story and the Easter season, it reminds me of how powerful the sacrifice the Lord made on the cross by basically saying, I love you so much, I'm willing to let you completely reject me. How wonderful a loving statement that is, and how absolutely terrible and terrifying that is when you really consider what that means. So how does this relate to the third use of doubt?
Well, the way I look at it, and this may be splitting hairs, but there's a distinct use as doubt shows up in what are called temptations, spiritual trials. So what we were just talking about was the digestion of historical faith or ideas we were handed from our culture and our parents. They're in our head. We're presented with them, and it's a question of whether we accept those or not. And so that's a digestion, which can easily be accompanied with a sense of trial or pain. But there's another category of spiritual trial, which is temptations. And that is, say we've chosen, as best as I understand the divine, I'm interested in pursuing a relationship with Him and a life according to His commandments. Now we need to be refined. And that's a slightly different process than digestion. It's a sifting out of impurities. Maybe it's just a more internal state of digestion.
So by temptation, you don't mean I feel tempted to eat a donut. You're talking about something more.
Yes, very much so. By temptation, I mean spiritual pain. Perhaps the defining characteristic of temptation is doubt. For a temptation to really be a temptation, we get to a period where we doubt either the Lord's power and presence, ability to save us, our own willingness to be saved. We have some fundamental doubt about an idea, but even ourselves. And that's what refines us. That's what humbles us. Whatever idea I had, even if it's close to the right idea in the end, if that comes into doubt and my own understanding of it comes into doubt, now I'm teachable again, because I'm questioning, maybe I don't have the idea perfectly clear yet. Well, whereas if I'm just sure of my thinking, I'm not teachable, and so I can't grow. It's painful, but we're arrogant, and so that's what needs to happen if we're going to be open to new ideas.
Can you give an example about this kind of spiritual temptation and doubt? We've been talking a lot about the belief in God, but can it be about other good things that we've chosen to make our own?
I think doubt comes up in all sorts of different areas of life. Chosen career is a good example, or our ability in a career. A lot of people, apparently, especially professionals, question whether what they're doing is of value or whether they're doing it well. It's a common type of feeling. And there again, you can see how that's humbling. It can be crushing and get you to leave a career, but it can also be humbling because you're saying, well, maybe I don't have this right. I make a commitment to marriage, and then doubts arise. You know, I wonder if I made the right choice, or I wonder if I'm truly committed, or I wonder about this idea of lifelong monogamy. Those type of ideas are presented to the mind. That process is challenging to this commitment I've made, and that can refine my commitment. It can humble me. It doesn't mean that I should test out these ideas and live them all out, but it can humble my sense of my own marriage, my own strength of what I bring to marriage. Right there is a good example where you can see that doubt run wild is not the only thing we want going on in our head, because if I follow all the doubts that come up, my marriage would end very quickly. And so that's where we add what could be called faith or commitment or perseverance, one of these opposing qualities to meet our experiences of doubt and despair.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chapman Cast. Tune in next week for part 2. Content on the Chapman Cast is owned by its hosts and interview guests. Find us online at newchurchperspective.com/chapmancast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and tell your friends. We welcome your feedback in the comments section of the website. Thank you for listening.